So welcome to all the folks watching on OccupyDC.org. I'm Pete Tucker. I report at thefightback.org locally here in DC. It's been awesome to watch this occupation grow. And I'm here with Candy Peterson, General Vice President of the Washington Teachers Union. At least she was General Vice President of the Washington Teachers Union, despite the fact that she was elected by the membership recently and her term is still going on, at least as far as it should be. She is not at the moment serving in that capacity, having been suspended, gagged, and then removed, something along those lines. Welcome, Candy Peterson.
Thank you very much for having me.
Explain your situation with the Washington Teachers Union.
Oh, wow. It's a little bit complex. I was what is known as summarily dismissed by the current president, union president, Nathan Saunders. And basically, I was told that my services were no longer needed. He, in collusion with the Deputy Chancellor of DC Public Schools, had him, who happens to be Jason Cameras, had him revoke my leave of absence. And I'm on a 3-year leave of absence. And of course, if I did not return, I would not receive a salary. It's been a long battle. I initially was suspended by Nathan Saunders, without due process, I might add, without a hearing, and it's just gone downhill from there.
And you were recently elected as General Vice President. Talk about that election.
Well, I was elected as a General Vice President by the rank and file, and I took office December 1st, along with Nathan Saunders, who I had pretty much been in partnership with for the last 3 years, and I believe that I helped to get him elected as the union president, along with myself, through a blog I wrote, known as the Washington Teacher Blog, as well as my activism against Chancellor Rhee. And I take credit for being maybe one of 10, 20 people to help run her out of town.
Talk about Michelle Rhee. I think a lot of people have heard about Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, and some of his anti-union actions. But a lot of that was seen before that, here in D.C., under then-school chancellor Michelle Rhee.
Well, Michelle Rhee was our first D.C. public schools chancellor, and she, under mayoral control, she was the former chancellor. She served about 3 years, and she came here with little to no experience in education, and many people would say that she was not qualified to be a schools chancellor, with the idea of reforming the schools and basically getting rid of a significant share of our teacher workforce. And basically, she was pretty successful with that, of firing about 1,000 school employees, not just teachers, but of course, principals, vice principals, and other school staff, you know, really without regard to their performance. And she pretty much had carte blanche under the former mayor, Mayor Fenty, and brought in many radical changes which were not necessarily in the best interest of student achievement.
So under Rhee, you spoke out, and we'll talk about how the Washington Teacher, the blog that you wrote, which gained widespread popularity, how did that come about?
It started by Michelle Rhee and the former union president, George Parker, introduced a contract to teachers called the Red and Green Contract, which basically was going to strip teachers of many of their hard-earned rights to seniority and tenure, and a lot of other things. And there was a lot of misinformation that was provided by Michelle Rhee. And of course, I wanted to get the word out to people what this contract really entailed. So I started writing about it. And pretty much the blog took off from there.
Were there consequences for speaking out under Rhee?
There were consequences. I was actually called into her office, which is pretty unusual. A person at my level being called in by the, you know, the top dog. I think she attempted to intimidate me for my activism, not only with the blog, but, you know, participation in rallies and that kind of thing, and encouraging me to, you know, to pretty much stop what I was doing. And fortunately for me, you know, nothing came of that, but the attempt was made by her nonetheless.
And so instead of backing away, you stepped forward. put yourself out as vice president, as a candidate for vice president of the Washington Teachers Union, and ran for office?
Yeah. You know, there was a lot in between, a lot of campaigning. We campaigned for over a year. And a lot of writing the other side of teacher stories. Michelle Reed did a lot of bashing of teachers and not telling half-truths. So I became a voice for teachers in this city.
We're right now, the former president of the Washington Teachers Union, George Parker, that's who Nathan Saunders and yourself ran against. What's he doing right now?
Well, as I understand it, he now works for Michelle Reed in her organization known as Student First, which is something that you don't typically see. And many believe that it was a payoff to Parker for selling pretty much teachers out, selling a lot of the rights away.
So the former union president who was supposed to be negotiating against Michelle Reed, who's been as anti-union a leader as we've seen in recent times, he's now working for Michelle Reed.
That's correct.
Candy Peterson, your blog, The Washington Teacher, maybe one of the reasons that it gained such popularity was because of the lack of willingness of the media in D.C. to cover the other side of so-called school reform. Talk about maybe The Washington Post and its coverage and maybe some of its interests.
Well, I think the Washington Post, along with some other mainstream media, they tell the story that, you know, they want people to believe. And oftentimes, unfortunately, I think we had good education writers, but a lot of times they would get editorialized and the truth wouldn't be told. The little person side of the story wouldn't be told. Or the story would appear back in the Metro section, or they would be relegated to Washington Post blogs. And so people wouldn't really know what's going on with all of the facts. And so you found that education blogs in this city were leading the way with a lot of the stories, and it forced newspapers like the Post, it forced other newspapers to have to tell the story, because we decided we were going to write about it, you know, whether they told it or not. And I think that's what helped push Ree out, because not just myself, but there were many other education blogs out there that were reporting what's going on, and some of whom were teachers and were anonymous.
And the Washington Post, Donald Graham, this chairman of the Washington Post company, is called the Washington Post, quote unquote, an education and media company. Education first. It owns Kaplan. Kaplan brings in over 50% of the revenue. That's the both the online schools and the testing company. And here you have Michelle Reed radically pushing the notion of testing kids each and every year, and or at least radically expanding the amount that both students and teachers should be tested. That was rarely disclosed, that by promoting Michelle Reed, as they did both in the Washington Post, both in the editorial pages and the news pages, they're promoting someone who will promote testing, and they are, in the words of their own chairman, an education and media company.
That's correct. I guess you could say it's a conflict of interest. And they certainly, Michelle Reed could do no wrong in their eyes. She was never criticized, you know, even when things came up, like for instance this cheating scandal in D.C. public schools, that was pretty much covered by USA and News Today, I believe
USA
it is.
Today.
USA Today, thank you. And, you know, even when that came out, they still really didn't want to touch that story, because then it dispels this myth about Michelle Reed, you know, being this reformer, that she really isn't.
And now her number two, Kaya Henderson, is in charge. So how much change has there been?
Well, I don't think there's not a lot of change that's happened. What's happened is this new chancellor is more low-key. I think that was by design. And of course, you don't see her on the front lines on the cover of Time. You don't see her bashing teachers anymore. But nonetheless, they still have pretty much the same agenda. And the agenda is to gentrify the school system, to push out many veteran teachers, to push out many teachers of color. And even though they say it's because of competence, you know, it's really hard to believe that that's the case, particularly with this evaluation system that's been created that's flawed.
Explain that, gentrify the school system.
Well, I mean, we've lost large numbers of teachers of color, and particularly teachers over 40, and I would say particularly teachers over 50. Not only teachers, but you're talking about principals, vice principals, and school personnel. And what Rhea did was create this revolving door workforce where the average worker comes and stays for 2 years and then promptly leaves out. And so you have this lack of stability going on. You have teachers who don't have the training, don't have the competence, don't have the cultural competence to deal with the students. And I predict that eventually the test scores will just further, will continue to go down. They were going up prior to Rhea. They were going up slowly, but they were going up nonetheless. I think they'll just continue to go down.
In addition to a gentrification of maybe some of the teachers, you have a gentrification taking place throughout the city. And I remember after the census came out, a front page article in the Washington Post that said that 43% of African-American children in the District of Columbia are living in poverty. Yet rarely under Rhea and continuing under Henderson is the issue of poverty put forward as a main impediment to kids learning.
Well, this administration, the Rhea administration, the Henderson administration, believes that poverty has no impact on student achievement. And so the problem is that if you subscribe to that notion, then you don't need to do anything to fix it. There's this one-size-fits-all approach to education. So kids are going to get the same thing east of the river as they do west of the park, not recognizing that kids east of the river, kids that grow up in, you know, impoverished families, they need more. They need a different prescription. And so that's the problem that we face. And it's sort of like, you know, it's like talking to a brick wall. You don't get anywhere with them because this is their belief system for whatever the reason.
You mentioned, maybe not by name, but the impact evaluations. These are the controversial evaluations of teachers that Michelle Rhea and now Henderson have implemented. Talk about this evaluation system and its impact. No pun intended.
Well, the evaluation system, first of all, was never piloted as it should have been. In all school districts, you see that evaluation systems are first piloted, where teachers would, a small group of teachers would opt in and you work out the kinks. They are working out the kinks as they go along. Every year, they make changes and they realize that there are problems with this evaluation system. And you have to keep in mind that Rhea's educational plan said she was going to get rid of a significant share of the teaching workforce. So they had to create a tool in which they could get rid of people. And this is the instrument. So it was not designed to be a fair tool. It was designed to do exactly what it's doing. And every year we're losing, you know, more and more teachers. And if they can't get you with test scores, say for instance, if you work at a school, 55% of you're in a testing grade, 55% of your test scores impact your evaluation. Well, if you work in certain schools, then you have poor test scores, then what do you do? If you were the victim of, say, students and they were at a school where they cheated the year before, then you get them and the scores go down, then basically you can be impacted out. And then there's a category where if you are disrespectful, it's called core professionalism. If you're late, they, you know, some people get many points taken off and get impacted out just by that category alone, which is unconscionable and it's very subjective. If an administrator wants to target you, I mean, I've seen where people have had 40 points taken off, and they're not really clear what was the reason. I've heard reasons like, well, the teacher is mean, so we took off 40 points because her student said she was mean, and they actually lose their jobs. So it's really something that needs to be taken a closer look at, and we need to try to fight it. And teachers want accountability, let me be clear. They want to be accountable, and they want to do well, and they want to have their students do well, but they want to be evaluated with a fair instrument.
Candy Peterson, where does Teach for America, what some people call Teach for a While, fit into all of this?
Well, it's one of the contractors, and they get millions of dollars. And basically, they supply teachers along with the New Teacher Project. And basically, teachers come here and take a They don't typically have a background in education, but they have a degree. And they sign up for Teach for America. They take a summer training course, and then they go directly into the classroom, often working in high needs areas, like your more impoverished areas. And many of them, I believe, you know, they have to be applauded in the sense that they're well-intended to try to come into poor communities and provide service. But what I think ends up happening is they, too, have been sold a bill of goods, that they would have the preparation, they go to school while they teach, and that they're just not given, first of all, they're not given the support by the administration, they're not given the tools that they need, and a lot of them are not prepared to deal with the kids in inner cities through no fault of their own, and they don't oftentimes have the mentor teachers that they need. So what you do is you see a lot of them bailing ship very early on and not even being able to keep their commitment of 2 to 3 years. And it's unfortunate. This system, DC Public Schools, doesn't really encourage that mentoring, informal mentoring that you get by working in the school with teachers who've taught for a while. And now with all of the pressure and this impact evaluation system, many people are so concerned about their own survival, they don't have the time to really reach out to other people to try to help them. So it's sort of like we're all on this Titanic, and unfortunately we're going down together.
One of the first acts that former Schools Chancellor Michelle Rhee and former Mayor Adrian Fenty did when Rhee first came to power was close, well, they tried to close 24 schools, they ended up closing 23 right off the bat. We are once again hearing talk of school closures. Talk about this approach to education, this closing schools that are underutilized.
Well, it's very. I was involved in the Coalition to Save Our Neighborhood Schools when they closed schools before, and I'm very concerned about the school closures, because where are these school closures going to be? They're typically going to be in your less affluent communities, your poorer communities where parents don't have a voice, the community may not have a voice, and in your more affluent communities like Ward 3, you're going to see those schools remain open. They're designed to be smaller schools. Schools in the poorer districts are designed to be larger, and of course they're going to be the ones cited as being underutilized. And eventually one day we're going to look up and, like, for instance, Ward 5 doesn't have a middle school. They're not going to be schools in these poor communities. Parents have to send their kids to, you know, far and wide to get an education. Many people are opting out to go to charter schools because they don't see the stability here. They want their children in a neighborhood school. They want their children to be safe and to know what the programs are. And so it's a repeat of what we had before with those 23, 24 school closings.
Explain that. The city has 8 wards. Describe Ward 5 and how is it possible for there not to be a single public middle school in all of Ward 5?
Well, there was this, I think what happened with Ward 5 and this idea was to create this kindergarten through 8th model. They started with this K through 8 model, and they were going to send everybody, so they closed the middle schools in Ward 5, and they were going to send kids to K through 8. And what they found was that the parents really didn't buy into this concept, and so you know, it just caused problems. It's not a successful idea. Parents were reluctant to want to send their kids to other wards, which meant a transportation issue, having to go and find another middle school. Now you have parents talking about, well, they want a middle school in Ward 5. I mean, they should have a neighborhood school, and you know, these plans just aren't well thought out. It seems to me that they're just like knee-jerk reactions, and that somebody sits around and says, oh, what should we do next? What should we do next? But I truly believe it's an effort to gentrify these communities. You keep making all these changes, and you basically push the poor out. You push them out to PG County or other parts of Maryland, possibly Virginia, other places, because, you know, it's basically nowhere for them to go. And you're making, you're changing the complexion of this city, unfortunately. And I believe that you're doing that because you want to make this city more attractive to probably more affluent families, and particularly white families. And it's really unfortunate that you have to go about it this way. There should be a place for everybody here to live, regardless of race, regardless of socioeconomic status. But it just doesn't seem to be the wave of our future, and we're going to have to fight. We're going to have to continue to fight.
Talk about Vincent Gray. He's someone who you campaigned for. He's now mayor of the District of Columbia. That's the highest office because D.C. is not a state, so there's no senators or governor, not yet a state. Previously, he was chair of the D.C. Council, and so in that capacity as head of the legislative branch, he held investigations into what was going on at DCPS under Fenty and Reid. There was money suddenly appeared, and then it was lost, and it appeared at convenient times as far as contracts. And he seemed to offer a real alternative. And I should say that on a number of issues, he is a very serious public servant. He's someone who's gone to jail for civil disobedience, for statehood. But on the education issue, while he seemed to be an alternative during the campaign, the result does not seem to be all that different from his predecessor, Adrian Fenty.
You know, I hate to bash him because I was really one of those people that believed in him. Like, there were many people in education that believed in Vincent Gray as it relates to education issues. And he saw a lot of things wrong with the former mayor, Mayor Fenty. And I'll give one example is the 266 teachers that were laid off, which we believe was a manufactured rift. And he was appalled by this. And he thought it was a systematic plan to oust teachers, particularly older teachers and, like I said before, teachers of color. And he promised that he was going to look into this and address this issue, particularly when he got elected. And of course, when he got elected, you know, nary a word from him. And I don't know, is that what politicians do when they get elected? But he also promised that, you know, Ree would be gone, and of course that did come to fruition. But the problem is we had no choice in the selection of a chancellor, and certainly many of us believe that he would at least open the door to have a search for a qualified chancellor and make a decision based on you know, numerous applicants. And of course he did not do that. He only considered Chancellor Kaya Henderson's resume, and no school district does that. No credible school system does that for a post such as that. So there's a lot of disappointment, you know, with him, it just doesn't bode well for the confidence that many teachers and school personnel had in him.
Can you talk about the teacher's contract that was signed just before the Democratic primary between Adrian Fenty and Vincent Gray, which offered teacher bonuses? This wasn't quite made clear if teachers gave up certain rights. And the money was in part provided by private foundations like the Walton Foundation or Walmart money, among others. Talk about this contract.
Well, it was cited as a revolutionary contract. But basically, it took away, stripped teachers of many rights with promises of higher salaries at a time when many unions weren't getting raises or many professions weren't getting raises. You have teacher bonuses, and many teachers didn't realize that in order to get bonuses, they would have to basically give up many of their rights, their hard-earned rights. There were sections of this contract where teachers lost rights. If a teacher gets excess from a school because of a budget problem and they go to look for another job, they can't find another job, then they can be called they have to go through so many interviews to find one. And if they don't find a school to pick them up, then basically they're on a one-year contract. And after that 1 year, if they don't find a permanent job, they're out. There were promises to give teachers who got accessed, if they had 20 years of full retirement, and that promise was reneged on in the contract. Basically, this contract is, to sum it up, 1,000 ways to kill a teacher. It's in accordance with Ree's plan to get rid of a significant share of the teacher workforce. It's just horrible. And every year we're losing hundreds of teachers for various reasons, through impact, but also teachers that are getting accessed out We're seeing large numbers of counselors, school counselors being forced out. So many of our students on the elementary level, middle school level, no longer have school counselors. Many of the special subject teachers, such as science and social studies, are being pushed out. And so these promises of quality education just weren't true. And of course, we have higher classroom sizes. I could go on and on, but it's a terrible, terrible contract.
And just one more point on the contract. It was described, this increased pay for teachers, as a bonus. But as you're saying, teachers had to give up rights. That's not quite a bonus.
Teachers have to give up rights. What they have to give up is if they get accessed. And
many of them chose not to accept it.
Right. Many teachers choose not to take this. Because basically, if they take it, then they could possibly lose their job. They're a greater risk of losing their job. But basically what it says is that if you take this bonus for the rest of your career, and you get accessed, then you don't have an option for a one-year placement. If you can't find someone to pick you up, then you will not be placed. And you could be an effective teacher, you could be a highly effective teacher, it doesn't matter. And of course, these people are highly effective. They will be on the streets and without a job. And the question remains is, why would a school system want to get rid of its highly effective teachers in this manner? It makes no sense.
How did you initially get active? Was it first as a building rep?
I started as a building rep, just speaking out about issues. Germaine, I was a service-related service provider, and I wanted to speak out about the issues affecting related service providers because we often didn't have the conditions that were conducive to learning for our students. And so I did that for about 4 years, and I also served on the executive, I was a board of trustee, for 3 years under the prior administration. And I became active in that way, and then, one thing led to another.
And your situation right now, here you are, the duly elected general vice president of the Washington Teachers Union, yet you've been removed from office. There's been very little coverage of this.
It has been very little coverage. There was probably the most coverage from the Washington Examiner, a little bit of coverage from the Washington Post. I'm pending litigation. I am suing the Washington Teachers Union. And so I expect to have a court hearing in December. There has been a response to my complaint from the Washington Teachers Union that they want to go to arbitration, which is part of my contract, which I'm looking forward to because I believe, I certainly will prevail because there was no due process afforded me. And I believe this was unconstitutional, removing an elected officer. I'm not clear on why people won't cover this. I've written about it some on the Washington Teacher blog, and I don't know if the coverage is lacking because I have not gone to court as of yet. I'm still pending the court date. I'm not sure, but I'm clear that the Washington Post, for whatever reason, they don't want to cast the current administration in unfavorable light, so maybe that plays into some of the reason for the lack of coverage.
The only coverage really is, well, there's always problems at the Washington Teachers Union, so here we go again. In fact, Nathan Saunders, the current president in his capacity as vice president, which he served as just directly prior to this, was also suspended by then President George Parker. So that's the extent of the coverage. Oh, it happens again. So here we go again. There's no really looking into the specifics of your situation.
Yeah, and the sad thing is this diminishes the teachers' union. What people don't understand, and I really wish teachers would be more vocal about this. If this could be done to me, our president basically colluded with the chancellor's office to achieve this goal. And Kaya Henderson has every reason to want to silence me. I mean, so does Nathan Saunders, I guess, because I surely would be fierce competition for him. But I talked a lot about the Rhea and Henderson administration in my blog. But if this could be done to me, imagine what could be done to teachers. And it happens every day, where this administration seeks to target teachers and push them out, and some of which is also salary related. Older teachers tend to have higher salaries. Why not get two for the price of one? But I need to forge ahead with this lawsuit, and the reason is this cannot continue to happen in our union, And for those vice presidents to come after me, I want a legal precedent, whether it be through arbitration or whatever means necessary, so that on record that it cannot be done again and that it's declared unconstitutional. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I never thought I'd be in this position to have to sue the teachers union. I thought our current president, Nathan Saunders, it had happened to him, so he would never resort to something like this. And when it happened, I was really blindsided by it. But nonetheless, here I sit today, and I'm fighting not just for what's not for me, just for me, but for the union, for what DCPS has done to me, and so that it can't happen ever again.
I think last time I saw you in person, you couldn't speak on the record. You had been gagged, I guess is the term. And you were, I think your pay was suspended, yet you were showing up at the office to continue working on behalf of the membership that elected you.
It's been a pretty rocky road since July. Initially, my pay was suspended. My WTU pay, which is a significant portion, all of my benefits were stripped. And I have a contract. This was all because of a dispute, which could have been resolved. I attempted to resolve it, sought a lawyer, and was asked to basically sign an agreement saying that I would agree to be fined and have my, I think the most important thing was have my freedom of speech rights stripped. It was stripped by Nathan Saunders and the board without a hearing. And of course, constitutionally, no one can strip you of your right to speak about yourself. And I was very concerned about that and decided I had to do something. It got worse. I would report to work and things just, they deteriorated, unfortunately, to the point where Nathan decided to get the deputy chancellor to revoke my leave of absence, which forced me back, you know, into the classroom. And what better way to silence me to strip me of working for teachers and be in competition for him in the next election. But I just truly believe I have a lot of supporters out there, and I believe legally that I will prevail because, as we know, due process rights are paramount in this country. I say stay tuned. Stay tuned for what's to come.
So, Candy Peterson, in order to have you removed as vice president of the Washington Teachers Union, Nathan Saunders had to have an agreement with District of Columbia Public Schools to revoke your leave of absence, forcing you back to the classroom. And Ward 7 Councilmember Yvette Alexander, concerned about this, wrote an email to Chancellor Henderson, and part of it reads, "As an elected official, I am aware of mechanisms to be forced out of office, and one is through a recall. I'm not aware of any executive actions to do so." In other words, what Councilmember Alexander is saying here is there are mechanisms to remove an elected official, recall, but not just because somebody, be it the president, decides to do so.
Councilmember Alexander is exactly right, and I applaud her for having the fortitude to stand up and to at least acknowledge that it was wrong. Unfortunately, there was a response from Chancellor Henderson that said that the reason that my leave of absence was revoked was because my services were no longer needed by Nathan Saunders. And unfortunately, this is unconstitutional. There are ways to get rid of an officer, one of which is through a recall by the rank and file. I can be recalled out of office as any elected official. I can have charges brought against me by members and be ousted as a union member if the membership decides to go that route. So there are two different ways to achieve that, and that has not happened. Basically, Chancellor Henderson is incorrect in her assessment that she cannot just agree with Nathan Saunders, he's sick of her, so I'm going to revoke her leave of absence. I believe it's illegal what she has done by revoking it. She cannot give a reason why it was revoked. I've not been charged with anything. Of course, I've never had a hearing, so... that's why it has to be addressed through legal channels, because he nor any other person can be allowed to do this again. And we've had other presidents, and this has never happened before. Many people are speaking about Barbara Bullock. Nathan Saunders makes Barbara Bullock look good. I mean, he really does. I mean, with the exception of the stealing, which certainly no one, you know, that's negative in and of itself. But the unfortunate part is that this diminishes our unions. And as many of my supporters have said, they voted for me. And I want to work for teachers. But my hands are tied until we can get this matter addressed through legal channels until I can get back. And I might add that even when I get back, I believe that Saunders is going to make it as difficult as possible for me to continue to work for teachers. But be that as it may, I'm going to really try hard despite, you know, the strained relationship that we now have to continue to work on behalf of teachers. That's what I came into this office to do.
You mentioned Barbara Bullock. Who was she?
She was the former union president who was convicted for stealing $5 million from the Washington Teachers Union.
Candy Peterson, lastly, all of this difficulty, there may be many other reasons, but the specific reason was, what, a meeting that was held where... Explain this meeting where there was a altercation of some sorts that has just snowballed into where we're at now.
We had a meeting, and the meeting had ended, and there were a few of us sitting around, including the president, having a discussion. And as I described to some media outlets, he began to speak to me in an abusive manner. And I confronted him about it and said that, you know, you're talking to me disrespectfully. And I'm just not going to continue to allow you to do that. And so I'm going to exit the meeting. And I did exit the meeting. I saw him a few minutes later, and he said he wanted to speak to me, and I said no. And the reason I said no, because I thought tensions were high and that I would have spoken to him later once things had calmed down. That snowballed into me being suspended without pay indefinitely until I would set up a meeting with him and the WTU General Counsel. And, of course, I made a decision I would not go into that meeting alone and did have secure representation. I was asked to sign what I believe was a political suicide note to admit wrongdoing to something. He morphed that into something way more than like it was about the work, and that was not the issue at all. And then I would admit to wrongdoing. I would have my rights stripped. I would have my pay suspended for 6 months, my duties restricted, and many, many other things. It was a draconian measure on his part. And I decided it could not be in my best interest to sign that, and it could be used against me politically down the road. It was called a take-it-or-leave-it-as-is deal, and that if I didn't take it, then, you know, we would see what happened. And when I did not take it, I had my pay stripped anyway. So it's just gotten really, really ugly. And I tell you, it's really blindsided me because I never thought, I had never seen this side of him before. But it's just very disheartening to be here today after fighting so hard to get to the vice president's seat. But nonetheless, that's where I am.
Nathan Saunders was the former vice president. He challenged George Parker and won, and now he's president. You were the vice president. Might you challenge Nathan Saunders in the upcoming Washington Teachers Union election?
I might. It's something I have to give thought to. My main thing is that I want this union to be a union for the people, not to be a dictatorship. And what I've seen evolve under Nathan, I don't know if that's the place that our union needs to be. So I am giving some consideration to a challenge. I don't see how we could work together. I just don't see it. It doesn't seem to be in the cards, to be honest. And I don't think it's in the best interest of our members either, or student achievement. But who would have thought we'd be here? Because I tell you, I would have loved to have been by his side, fighting with him, being a partner as we originally agreed to. But that just didn't happen.
Candy Peterson, any final thoughts you have as we're out here? It's starting to rain, but we're under a tree, so we're mostly covered at Occupy DC. This occupation movement has been supported by teachers in various parts of the country, and the union movement has gotten behind it. The AFL's, Metro Labor Council, adjourned their meeting two nights ago early to walk over here. I don't think the Washington Teachers Union has endorsed it yet, but any final thoughts you have as we're here at Occupy DC on K Street?
Well, I think it's certainly something, an effort that the teachers in D.C. would get behind. The only thing I will say is right now, our members are just so caught up in their own plight and their suffering. And it's, you know, it may give the appearance that they don't care about anything except themselves, and that just isn't the case. And I understand that there are going to be some members that present this as a motion at one of our upcoming meetings. But, just stay tuned, and I think you will see the Washington Teachers Union get involved. At least some members of the Washington Teachers Union get involved.
Any other final thoughts you care to share?
I just want teachers to know that I want to continue to fight for them and work in my role as General Vice President. And as soon as we can get a resolution to my lawsuit, I certainly will come out publicly to discuss it more in detail and keep people informed. And once I get back on K Street, I do plan to do the job that I was elected to do. But I want to say, Pete, thank you so much, because you've always been there and you've always covered the stories that needed to be told. And I want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Candy Peterson.